Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.
It's Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. I do hope you're well. We've got some great guests in the studio for this week's programme. As we continue to talk about mental health on the radio, it's what we do here at Radio City Talk. We've got a comedian and mental health advocate. Really, they're a comedy pairing because they're in town doing a couple of shows and doing a little bit of warm-up ahead of their tour in October, a little bit later on in the year. Steve O'Timothy is with us alongside Sinead, a.k.a. Farmer Michael, and Kathleen. Guys, thank you for coming into the studio. It's great
to
see you.
Thank you very much for having us. I think when anyone says the words like Farmer Michael on radio or on TV, they immediately think I'm going to go into an expletive-filled rant. And like, I don't really curse that much anyway. You know? Yeah. It's like, don't have him on. He'd go mad. Like, it's like...
For people who don't know the Farmer Michael story, it's an interesting one, and it plays out on social media, right? And it's Kathleen and Farmer Michael, and it just so happens that you
guys...
Sounds
nicer with Kathleen first.
Hey. And then, not your place, woman.
You've got sort of big Merseyside links as well.
Yeah.
They're kind of football related with Everton Football Club as well. And something you did that was big on Wayne Rooney. Kind of went viral as
that,
well.
That kind of blew it up, yeah. Like we mentioned Everton the odd time before. But then when we done that Wayne Rooney one before that time, then it just like.
Because I think we like to focus a lot of our videos like on current events, and it was at the time he left England.
He retired.
Yeah. So that kind of popped up, and then like we've always been Everton fans. My granddad's from Bootle, and like it's always been in my family, so I had that knowledge anyway.
And I had to do the video anyway because I remember when Wayne Rooney first started playing and. He was with Everton and there was the whole thing, will he declare for Ireland or will he declare for England?
Yeah.
And I remember everyone going in Ireland like, oh, he'll definitely declare. Like, look at the spud picking head in him. Like, he's
surprise.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt in his Irishness. You know what I mean? Like, turnip picking looking fella. Beautiful man now, all the same, if you're listening, Wayne, because I heard he's around. So
we do
love him, though. But so we just had to do the video where I was convinced that he was Irish and he did play for Ireland and... So I kind of, it just went mad then. Like, I didn't really use Twitter. I had about 1,000 followers, so I didn't bother with it. And then the next day, I had like 15,000 or something. I was like,
this is working.
Yeah, so like Twitter now is exclusively for our kind of football things.
Football
other things
and
well.
Like a lot of English,
mental health
but a little things too. So we do a lot about Brexit and stuff like that. So which is great fun.
Absolutely.
We've been asked to do a lot of videos about a certain person that was jailed today, and we're like,
jail for journalism?
No, we're not getting involved in that stuff, man. Not a chance.
He was jailed for contempt of court.
Exactly.
I don't think many journalists go to prison for actually doing their jobs properly in this country.
It's a special kind.
So
we've got Steve, we've got Sinead with us in the studio. We'll hear about the comedy shows that they've got going on in Liverpool as well, and I'm just looking at producer John because, I mean, he's allowed to say this stuff, right? The Irish stuff. He's allowed to say that because he's Irish, right? So we can't get into trouble. No, that's fine. That's absolutely fine.
Say it out, whatever you want. Paddy.
You guys are big advocates with both sort of physical and mental health as well.
Yeah, we're both as messed up as each other, I think it's fair to
physically
say.
Physically and mentally,
absolutely. So
we both had accidents a couple of years ago, and with the mental health side of things, we were really fortunate to be linked with Everton. Obviously, they're our favourite team, but they are one of the only football clubs who have a mental health facility linked with them, as the EITC, the People's Place. So we're really, really fortunate that they reached out to us to do some work with them, because we've always been wanting to do that. So, I mean, what better way than to link it with the club we love?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And in terms of that, you've both been involved in accidents as well. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about physical and mental health, we often draw comparisons. Were there links in regard to accidents that you'd had with mental health, or were they separate things that almost have to be linked, do they?
I think maybe they were separate at the start, but on a milder scale. And then the
for
accident.
For you, would it be more
for me,
due to your accident as such?
Yeah, definitely. So 7 years ago, a horse landed on top of me. I hate saying that out loud.
It just sounds
bizarre.
Yeah. I was walking down the street.
And a horse fell from the sky.
Yeah, second floor window.
Like before comedy, my passion is show jumping. So we were training young horses and the horse tumbled. I landed on the ground and it somersaulted and landed on top of me. So I tore all of the ligaments in my knee, all the main ligaments. I fractured my fibia. I had 7 operations to repair it, and it just took its toll on me. Like, these operations lasted about 3 years, and then the kind of aftermath of that was just, it was horrible. Like, I didn't finish my schooling properly. I barely went because I was so nervous and scared. I didn't go to any like schooling events, like my grads or my prom or anything like that. I barely left the house unless I really had to, like going to appointments and stuff like that. So it's really affected me and my self-consciousness and stuff, my appearance and things. So.
And then you met me and I made all these things public for you.
Yeah.
So that probably
made
it worse.
No, but obviously when I met Stephen, he had been through his accident and we kind of related to that on a really great level. Like we were really able to understand each other. No one ever really understood what I had been going through. And I don't think a lot of people understood kind of what you are still going through. And it made it easier for us both to talk so openly about it, not just to each other, but then to everyone else, I suppose. Because we had each other to back each other up.
There'd be a lot of people who would think, oh, there was an accident, it was a terrible accident, and then doctors fixed your leg over a period of time. Mm. So what could possibly have gone wrong? But we're in this new world of understanding of suddenly going, well, actually, one thing isn't, you know, leading to another.
Absolutely.
There are other stories that are going on, that idea of isolation maybe, recovery.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you were very young at the time, right? You were still very much
a teenager.
I was
17, yeah. I just, it was the year before my final school year, before my exams, so I didn't get the college course I wanted because I was barely going to school, like I said, and it was a huge knock on my confidence when everyone was starting to go out and go to parties and stuff like that, and that just never happened for me. And I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be able to be back riding horse and stuff, but I'm reminded every day and every morning, especially when my knee is stiff and, you know, it buckles from under me and stuff, and I'll always kind of have that on my back, but sure, look, I'm here and it's getting better.
I wake up with stiff body parts as
no
well.
This is daytime radio.
Yeah, sorry about that. No, I was going to say with my accident. I'm just messed up from birth.
He's got all sorts.
Yeah, my accident didn't really. Well, I've always been like I've put on depression medication when I was about 16. I don't know. It's the old thing. Like, what are you depressed about? I don't know. Like, I wasn't depressed about anything. I didn't feel depressed, but obviously, I was acting out in school. I got expelled. I was probably a little bit like ADHD at the time, but there was no diagnosis of that.
At that time,
you were just a bold kid, you know what I mean? You were a clown or whatever, looking for attention. And then I suppose, like, the accident, my mental health battles probably led to my accident, whereas with Sinead, it's the opposite, because I started drinking a lot and I felt normal when I drank, and obviously...
And you were at an older age than I was, so you had access to drink and things
And got on my motorbike one night drunk and crashed it and broke my neck, back, leg, collarbone, shoulders, every sort of thing. Head, shoulders, knees and toes, yeah. So I was in hospital for about 8-9 months, and I suppose then it really came to fruition when I came out of hospital. Because when you're in hospital, everyone's sharing the same thing, which there's people around you. You come out of hospital, you're sitting at home in your bed in a sitting room watching daytime TV. Everyone's at work, all your friends are at work, everyone else is at college or school or whatever, and you're just like, so this is it kind of thing, you know. And that's when it really hits you, when you get home. That's when there's like support from your family, but there's no wider support, there's no like community support or whatever. So just went back drinking again, really.
Was there a sense that drinking was your own sort of form of self-medication? Because
absolutely,
you know you'd played the school game and lost.
Yeah,
if you like.
Yeah.
The school got, it's not for you. We don't want people like you here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like drinking for me, it made me feel normal. It made me feel
brave.
Yeah, because when you suffer from anxiety, like I couldn't come up here for 20 minutes. I was sitting outside the building, like contemplating whether I'll go back to the car and flee or come up here. So
and
it took
again,
me a while
it's
to like.
Why are you anxious? Why are you panicking? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, which shoes
and
go to lift.
Obviously, if you have a few drinks, you don't feel that feeling. So like when I used to drink, I'd be like, oh, so this is what normal people feel like, to be able to go to the shop and not be afraid, or to be able to like sit in a park and not be scared of everyone. So like, obviously, if you look at it that way, you can see like how drinking would be the perfect thing, because it'll make you forget all them problems.
Well, and I understand that, like he was saying, you know, drinking does make you feel normal, but I think it's like he hasn't drank for 3 years now, which is amazing, and I'm so proud of him. But I think even though he does suffer with the anxiety and the panic now, he doesn't have to suffer with that 4 or 5 day hangover or that binge and the worst panic attack after that, after realizing what
he's done. Yeah, because it creates its own problems anyway.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Especially when, like me, I didn't drink regularly, but I binge drank. I drink a massive amount for a skinny fella, and I'd wake up the next morning, I'd be still half cut. I'd down a bottle of vodka, like easily, or a bottle of whiskey or whatever I could get my hands on. like quite easily, like, and go for maybe 3-4 days.
Yeah.
And then you wake up, obviously, and
the consequences of that
shaking, massive panic attacks, like just half dialing like 99 on your phone, like maybe for an eight hour spell. Will I ring the hospital, kind of thing. So
we're kind of getting more used to hearing about phrases like depression, anxiety, panic attacks. I still get a sense from a lot of people that we're not, even people who know about this stuff, aren't necessarily that sure about how to communicate that. They can kind of share their own personal experience and say, this is what it feels like for me.
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes if you say, I broke my leg and it broke in half, then the doctors fixed it.
Yeah.
And it was all done. I always get the sense with depression and anxiety that, that it's so nuanced to people that you're almost having, if you, it, once you experience it, you have it, you can explain it in your own words about how it affected you. But I'm never quite sure whether or not, you know, you,
it's so individualistic though. Like everyone can break a leg and everyone can get it fixed. Obviously, the nature of human psychology, pain perception might be different. But with something like panic attacks, like it's so individualistic. So like you, when you feel nervous or anxious, you like people around you. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Get away from, like if we're going to a show and there's five of us in the car and I start to feel panicky, and I know one's coming on, I have to pull up and everyone has to get out of the car. I can't have people watching me. And that's probably maybe a bit of a macho thing as well, that I can't see, I don't want anyone to see me at my like utter weakness or my utter bawling, eye crying, like lowest, you know. So it's kind of, maybe that's that way. But like I was saying, people, like, you know, they message me and they ask me for advice and things, and I've become this quasi psychologist over the last like year since I like came out publicly with my mental health issues and stuff. And it's kind of like, I don't know what to tell you, because, you know, I was on that and it didn't work, but that might work for you. And I'm on this now, but I was on this before and it didn't work, but now it is, because I'm at a certain age or I'm not drinking. So it's completely like, it's your lifestyle, drinking, but drinking is a massive cause of it. And a lot of people just, they don't see that.
Like. Yeah. But then this first generation of people, if you like, who are talking about this stuff openly and publicly, coming out, if you like, are the first generation, whereas in other stuff, there'd be the people who were saying it, then there'd be a load of professors on it, which in many ways there are for mental health, but then there'd be a load of textbooks and there'd be a lot of historical evidence for stuff that you could almost lean on straight away. Whereas actually for a lot of people now, they're saying, well, I've spoken out. And then people are leaping on those people going, well, tell me what I need to know now, because they're looking for that evidence. They're looking for that shared experience. They're looking for that connection with their own feelings, their own thoughts.
Yeah, because like it's all well and good, like some professor that has studied psychology and like the phenomenon of panic attacks for like 50 years.
Individual person in the world.
Yeah. And is standing up on his pulpit talking about it, and or his lectern and talking about it, and he has never experienced a panic attack. It's a completely different kettle of fish. Like,
I think a good example of that is Stephen's doctor. He's a fantastic doctor and he'll do anything to try and help him. But Stephen asked him honestly, he's like, have you ever had a panic attack? And he said no. And Stephen was like, I find that hard to kind of express what I'm saying to you without you understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I've always compared it to like having a heart attack and crashing a car at the same time, but that would be easier, because at least then you could explain to your mind, the reason I'm feeling this panic is because I've actual physical pain.
Yeah.
But when you're sitting in a car and there's nothing to be terrified of and your whole body's eating you, it's a lot harder to explain to yourself. Like if someone ran over and broke my leg, I'd be there, okay, there's the pain, that's why I'm feeling this way.
Mm-hmm.
But with your own head, it's harder to do that. Like, so.
In terms of the success that you've had in terms of social media, theatre shows, stand-up comedy, character comedy as well, have you kind of squared that circle within your own minds about, you know, going through what you're going through, but also exposing yourselves to potentially millions of people, doing stage shows where people come in and sort of want to laugh and all. I mean, there's a lot of goodwill in those theatres, of course, but there's an expectation placed upon you as well. Some people always go, well, that would be the last thing I'd want to do if I thought that, you know, a panic attack might be.
Yeah, I know. Like,
I think sometimes right before a show, it is the last thing we want to do.
we want to flee. Like.
Yeah, but it always helps that first like 10 seconds when you get on stage, it really is really refreshing and it goes away. But obviously it's the lead up and the waiting around and things like that kind of makes it worse.
But like I always say, it's a bad joke. Like I want to walk away, but I can't. Literally, physically. So, like, it is. Like, I couldn't imagine myself doing something like this a few years ago. Like,
no, It all happened by accident.
Yeah, I was doing. We were started doing the videos about 4 years ago, and about 2.5 years ago, my friend Johnny, we were at a charity thing, and he said to come down, and he threw me up on stage, and he was just like, "Go on," and I was like, "Absolutely not, Johnny," and I was like, "Oh, that's like I was in some state that night, like just 2 hours preparation kind of thing."
Yeah.
He goes, "Go on up there and do a bit," and the light came on me, and it's just like, I got through it, but my God, was I in a state like, you know,
yeah.
I slept, I think, for like 2 solid days after that, because I don't know if any of you have ever had a panic attack, but it physically and mentally drains you. Like, if you have a major one, you could sleep for 2 or 3 days because it takes so much out of you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we blame Johnny Graham for that, for throwing me on
our
stage.
Our support act
on the tour.
Just downstairs at the Royal Court Theatre here in Liverpool, there's great work they do in regard to stand-up comedy, but they have mental health courses that are based on stand-up comedy, and it's about sort of self-esteem and confidence, and there's sort of a real sort of like camaraderie between the people on board. But of course, it ends with, if they choose to do it, a live stage show.
That's
and of
really
course, people say like, why on earth would you put yourself through that if you were concerned about your mental health? But actually, as people grow through the course, they actually find that, well, okay, I'm in a position where I can do that. And I know that the feedback in the room is going to be, you know, relatively positive.
Yeah,
That, though, over like 6-12 weeks, not you're on in 2 hours' time.
Yeah,
Make sure you're funny.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea.
Get up there. Yeah, that is a good idea, though. And especially when you, as you said, it's not compulsory. You have the choice whether you're going to do it or not. I'd love to be given the choice, but Johnny threw me on stage that night. So
This is our lives now.
In terms of the conversations around mental health, is the conversation different in Ireland to how it is in the UK? Now there's this thing where people kind of talk about it. There's radio stations that have shows about it. It kind of gets worked into soap operas in terms of storylines.
I think people are talking about it a lot more in Ireland, but I still feel it's a lot less open as well. Like on our Irish soaps and our mental health facilities in Ireland, they're not as great as they are here.
Yeah,
There's a lot of waiting.
Well, I think
they're
bad everywhere, aren't they, really?
Yeah.
You're trying to get help.
But I think there are more services available here, and there's a lot of waiting lists in Ireland. Unless you go private, like, you could be gone by the time you get that help. And I think that's really shocking for a country with such a small population.
It happens in our small city quite regularly. Where
People are turned away because they're not apparently suicidal enough. That's like a term that's used a lot in Ireland.
You're not bad enough.
Yeah.
And they end up throwing themselves into the carb, the river.
Yeah, in the river. And it's awful. So we're very, very pleased, like we said again, we'll do everything we can always to promote it in Ireland. That's where we're from and that's our country. And we won't stop that. But we're very pleased to be able to help over here as well. And again, especially with Everton. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that phrase you just used there about you're not suicidal enough is a phrase I've heard people talk about in the UK as well,
when
which is a real shame.
Like,
Your leg is not broken enough to come into A&E. You know, it's...
In terms of, was there a sense of relief when you heard that Everton were actually doing such positive things? If you're an Everton fan and you've got a mental health experience and you find out that Everton are actually sort of in the Champions League, if they were, Champions League when it comes to to mental health, there must be a little bit of pride in there.
Absolutely. Oh, like, 100%. They're such a socially aware club.
But they're always known as the people's club, and they will literally do anything for the people supporting.
And they seem
to
genuinely give a damn, like...
Yeah.
As opposed to a multinational conglomerate football club, which is basically a business, you know. So I'm not pointing.
Nobody has any idea.
Yeah, I'm talking about
that. Yeah, Chelsea. Yeah.
No.
Well, there's only one. Like, we all know, there's only one team in this city anyway. And that's Everton. You know, Tranmere Rovers are there.
They're all right.
I've not even taken him on this one. So we've got Steve O'Timothy with us in the studio as well. We've got Sinead as well. And you've got your tour. You're back in, is it October?
In October, the 24th and 25th of October in the Epstein here in Liverpool. I think the 25th could be sold out. That's the Friday, but there are some left.
They're probably all sold out, to be honest.
But all the tickets for that are available on the Epstein's website. And then we are doing a couple of more cities in the UK. So we're doing Blackpool, Sheffield, Nottingham,
Manchester.
Two nights in Manchester. Like, there's loads of them.
And we're doing two shows in London as well then.
In November.
November.
But all tickets are available on Eventbrite if you search for Farmer Michael, or just on all our social media.
Or just Google
Farmer Michael, enter your city here.
It's a Farmer Michael sort of character show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Full.
And when people go and see, I don't know, sometimes people go and see like Al Murray. And yeah. they go, that stuff you were saying about immigrants, Al, you're spot on
there.
Oh
my God.
We get that.
You must get that.
We get that.
And like, what can you say? These are people who've paid to come to our show. We're just, oh, thanks very much. Yeah.
Minority now, thankfully, because I've done a lot of videos where it's become clear my personal views.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah. But I remember one day we were in Armagh
I won't say it.
But we were in Armagh and a fella comes down after the show and he goes, ah, it's a great show. I hate those. Bad word for black people too. And I was like, oh my God, like you didn't, did you? You know.
And what can you say?
Yeah, like? And I was kind of, I was almost disgusted then, like, you know, that.
There are people who.
I felt bad that I do this and that he thinks that I am that. You know what I mean? If that makes sense, like, and to say that to me. And I was just like, I wanted to go like, you're an idiot. I'm mocking you and the way you think. But like, I just went like, oh, thanks for coming, you know, because there was a crowd and it was like, what he said.
But that's why the people say we're in this sort of post-satire era.
Yeah.
Where that anything can be ridiculous enough and it'll still be taken seriously.
The point of comedy being I'm holding a mirror up to all of this and we're mocking it. But then people are going, oh, no.
Easy.
I'm cutting out that level of it.
That farmer Michael is right. I hate the immigrants. You know, it's like, oh.
But that was the Alf Garnett situation as well.
And
there are people now, Alf Garnett wouldn't have stuff. It's like, that thing was supposed to be a Mickey take for people who thought like Alf Garnett.
You're pulling the piss out of racists. You're pulling the piss out of homophobes. You're pulling the, you know.
Stop saying piss on the radio.
It's okay. Extracting the urine.
So what we'll do, we'll have looped that into an edit and then it'll be absolutely fine when it goes out.
Great.
Don't you worry about that at all. So the show's coming to town right across the northwest as well, Blackpool too. Which, have you been to Blackpool recently?
No, we've never been to Blackpool ever.
Oh, we're doing Southport as well.
Oh yeah, we're doing the Southport Comedy Festival for the second year in a row.
Oh, you should have mentioned that earlier on, shouldn't you?
Yeah. The last two were sold out, which is great. I think we had other Irish comedians there. They didn't even sell out one, so we're feeling good. I won't mention him, but he's blonde and his name is
Jason Byrne.
No names.
No.
Not Jason Bourne now.
No.
The Byrne identity.
But yeah, we've never been to Blackpool. I'm really excited. I always see Blackpool on Coronation Street when they go and I'm like, oh my God, it's so pretty and I can't wait to go.
Like, doesn't always work out for all the characters though when they go to Blackpool on Coronation
especially
Street.
Especially not Roy. It's so sad.
That's why I don't watch soaps.
And just in terms of the success that you've had, have you found that you've had, and obviously talking about mental health as well, that sometimes you might find you've suddenly got an invite to somewhere very important or you've suddenly got someone quite important wants to speak to you about the work you do. Have you had an experience of that
yet? We're going to the Dixie Dean Hotel opening tomorrow and I'm like looking at all the people that are being invited and I'm like, we don't belong there.
If Wayne Rooney is there and I don't get a video with him, with Farmer Michael, I will be a very depressed man on the ferry home.
It'll
on
be
Saturday.
All his fault.
Because, it'd make it like. But
we
have
things like that, like being invited to a whole day at the People's Place at the EITC. Like, that's something we're so grateful for. Like, that people actually wanted us to come
us
in.
Showing us around and stuff.
Yeah, and hear our stories and stuff. And it's just so lovely and really heartwarming. So,
brilliant stuff. Thank you both for your time today. Thanks for joining us on the programme as
well.
Where's the best place to get people's information? Social media is pretty big for this one. Sir Steve O'Timothy.
It's
the best place for that one. Janine, you're on there as well. There's links on,
on
both.
Yeah. And all the Eventbrite pages as well.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you both for joining us on the show today, being so open and honest with your stories. And hopefully we'll see you again when you're back in town for the tour.
Yes,
definitely.
Thank you for
having
us.
Thank you so much.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.